The Borderland is home to a wealth of filmmaking talent, and every year scores of films of all sizes are produced in the region and make their way out into the world. Every one of these films begins as a blank page and an idea in a screenwriter's mind. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. El Pasoans Austin Savage and Roland Esparza have collaborated on a feature film screenplay, El Pavo Bravo, that has been getting attention from a number of national film institutions. I'm happy to have Austin Savage and Roland Esparza on the program today. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good to see you both via Zoom. You know, a lot of news lately for you two. Austin, I wanted to start with you. It's been a while since you've been on the program. I should mention you're also the director of the Border Theater, an actor and playwright and all things creative. Fill us in on your recent diversion back to school and how getting a master's brought you to this project and how you and Roland began collaborating.
Thanks. Obviously, COVID affected, you know, the whole world and the Border Theater included. So, you know, the ability to not perform live impacted, you know, a live performance troupe. So particularly I wasn't particularly interested in doing things like play readings via Zoom, because that's not even the medium, you know. So Essentially we just went on hiatus for a couple of years and are just now planning a return to live performance. But during that hiatus, I realized I had an opportunity, so I enrolled in an MFA program at Emerson College. And it was my second year in the program. I just recently graduated this year. So it was in the fall of 2000 where I had to write a feature film. And I had a couple ideas that I thought about pitching to my classmates and professor. And at that time, Roland had suggested to me that we collaborate, or I help him shoot some Instagram videos about a depressed luchador who becomes a folk singer to deal with his emotions. And there was something about that image and that, yeah, that image and character. Yeah. That hooked me. So I asked his permission if I could pitch that idea as a feature to my class. And he said it was okay. I pitched it. That was the overwhelming favorite choice of my classmates and my professor. So with that, Roland and I sat down. We wrote an initial outline. We decided that each of us would get a couple hills to die on, you know? And then outside of those hills, we'd collaborate, and we died on a few hills early on, but because we did, we had a really good roadmap with that outline. And then that's it. I started to type and get to work. And then once a week, Roland would show up and we'd review what was happening and come up with new ideas. And all of a sudden, you know, 7-8 weeks later, the whole thing was done.
So Roland, obviously, when Austin approached you, you already had the genesis of an idea. Where did that inspiration for this character of Ruben and this luchador, who also wants to be a musician, come from?
So initially, it came out of I want to say loneliness and this idea of just being alone because of, you know, the self-quarantine and not self-quarantine, the quarantine overall,
sure,
and lockdown and everything. And there's a lot of scary things about being alone with your own thoughts. And for whatever reason, in my mind, first thing that comes up is regrets. And then the second thing that comes up is highlights. And it's just one of those things where I started thinking about everything I've done wrong. Everything I've done wrong in my life and what I could have fixed and how I could have been a better person back then, you know, because when I was younger, it was all rock and roll and vitriol, you know. I was just like not the best me I could be. And then slowly but surely, I started evolving as a human being, and it was like love and folk music, you know. So like, I wanted to figure out a way to put this into a character. And also, I play music. I'm not great at it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to create a character, put on this luchador mask, and I'm going to put out my music anonymously. And that's kind of where the idea started in my mind. That's kind of when I realized it was a good idea.
So having just
And
read the
then
screenplay, though, all of what you just said has filtered into that screenplay, certainly. I wonder, Austin, if you can give the 30-second version of what this broad arc is of this character who's having the regrets that Roland's talking about and also trying to find a path forward to a better self.
yeah, absolutely. Essentially, the 30-second pitch is it's about a man who's extremely gifted at a thing he's never really wanted to do, but because he's a legacy,
And that's
because
the
it's a family
luchador
business. That's
wrestling.
the luchador, right? He's a long line, and he's last in the long line of legendary luchadors from a family, and he's extremely gifted at every component of it. His in-ring and his on the mic performance, his ability backstage, all that stuff. But when a tragic incident occurs, it kind of forces him to take stock in his life, and as Roland was talking about, kind of review his past and look upon his mistakes and shed his toxicity and kind of pursue the things he's always wanted to do. But I think as people shed their toxicity and as people try to grow, part of it is we don't know, people don't know how to be better people, so that's a whole process in and of itself. So he's learning to be a better person, and that's what this film is about. Someone who's desiring to be better, but they get in their own way. And as we've referred to it over and over, it's a story about coming of age at any age. It's not something, we tend to think in narrative that there's all this great teenage or youth moment where things can happen, but it can happen in this case, a 40-year-old luchador's life,
And Roland, talking to you both and having read the screenplay just a few days ago, it seems like it was an important aspect for you both that this writing, this screenplay, this story happens on the border. It happens in the culture that we know so dear, that we live with every day. And I take it that the plan for making the film, if you're fortunate enough to get to that stage, would also be very border-centric and very based in El Paso.
Yeah, of course. We want to showcase local talent as best we can, both in front of the camera and behind the camera. And I know that as cliché as it sounds, when people say, "Oh, New York is the third central character of the film," well, we want El Paso to be like front and center of that. We want that to be the silent character. I'm not thinking of the correct term for it, but yeah, that's kind of what we're hoping for, because El Paso gets a bad rap. It gets cartels, immigration, kids in cages. Like that's what people think about when they think of El Paso, but there's so much more to it. Like the culture, the border, everything is beautiful here. It's amazing. Like when I was living in Chicago, El Paso was calling me home. It was just like, no, dude, like you've learned what you've learned here. Now you got to come home and you got to do something for your community. And real quick, the turkey, in spiritual meaning, has a lot to do with community and just giving back. So that was something interesting that I found out after we had written the screenplay.
El
So
Pavo.
I thought, yeah,
Yes.
El Pavo. So I thought it was just a beautiful coincidence.
So Austin, you guys clearly are getting some traction already, just at the screenplay. We should pivot and talk about the amazing eyeballs that are getting on this. You two wrote the screenplay; it got out in the world somehow, and you were quarter finalists, I understand, for an Academy grant. Sundance, you're in the second round there, and you recently got a grant from the Blacklist. Tell us a little bit about all of that traction that's going on nationally for the screenplay.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I remember typing out the last, word on the script and then shooting it to Roland, and we both agreed that it was in pretty good shape, or as good a shape as you could be with the first draft, And So we immediately started tweaking it. We wrapped it, probably wrapped writing it in the fall of 2020. And then, you know, we let it sit for a little while so we could, you know, clear our brains a little bit. And then in the spring, we just did some slight revisions. And that's, the spring is also when competition season opens up. Mm-hmm. For any listeners out there interested, get ready, because the spring is arriving again. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I was in grad school and I didn't have a ton of money, but I knew that we were sitting on something pretty good. And I just kind of wanted to get some eyeballs on it. So the first thing I did was submit it to the blacklist. And then they hosted on their site. And the first response we got was they gauge and read your script and give it a score. And we got an 8, which is extremely, extremely good. I think 4% of all scripts on the blacklist, you know, sit at an eight or higher. And I mentioned this in private to you earlier, Chuck. It was bizarre because our script got a shout out from the blacklist and was placed on their email blast the same week as a Shia LaBeouf script. Huh. So it was just kind of bizarre
good
to be
company, right?
You know, yeah, to be in a tweet with Shia. Anywho, so yeah, that was the first kind of real external validation we got that we were sitting on something special, and that encouraged me to send it out to a couple more festivals, including the Nickel Festival, you know, which is run by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Yep. All right. You got it right. The Oscars.
Yeah. So that was, and that's an extremely prestigious one. And that's the one where myself and all my MFA classmates, we all submitted to that. And, you know, I managed to get into the quarterfinals on that, which again was pretty prestigious. I think out of like 9,000 entries or something, there's 100 quarterfinalists. So we're extremely proud of that. And as a result, we got invited into the Sundance Lab. And we put it in the second round, and it's presently there. And
fantastic.
Yeah, and
hopefully, some good news coming in November that you're making it to the next round. So, Roland, what do you think is attracting this attention? Is it just the uniqueness of having a luchador, border centric, that people aren't outside of the region aren't used to reading these kinds of scripts?
I feel like the luchador gets you in the door. Like, that's like, okay, all right, I'm here for it. And then after that, I think it's the relatability of the story, where someone is looking at someone else. So in this case, it's a luchador looking at his life, how his life could be better. But to other people, like, he's got it made. So I think it's the idea of living in the extraordinary but wanting to be ordinary. And showing that everyone has how a lot of people have the same kind of issues that they deal with, that they think that the grass is always greener on the other side. So then flipping the script, where people would say, oh, this guy seems to have it made, but he hates it. So seeing how he wants to go out of his way and kind of blow up his life to...
Yeah, it definitely has some universal themes that underpin the character's journey that I think everybody can relate to that's not from here. And that's part of the craft of screenwriting. And that's a good pivot, maybe, as we wind up the show, Austin, to mention that you have been hosting weekly workshops for writing for film and television. Is that every week?
Yeah, it is. It's every Sunday, presently at 11 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. We do them via Zoom. You know, that's just the way the world was working when they started. And we've been doing it ever since. And it was initially an extension of a local playwriting group that I was running. But we've officially gone global. You know, we have members from Bosnia, you know, who are taking part. And yeah. So if anyone wants to get a hold of us, they can just always give me a call.
They go to the Border Theater.
Yeah, at 915-276-6929, or email me at asavage@bordertheater.org.
Perfect.
And yeah.
Well, it's always great to see local talent find national attention. Certainly, you guys have certainly found it. Best of luck with the next steps with your screenplay. I sure appreciate you all talking to us about El Pavo Bravo.
Thank you so much, Charles.
Thank you, Charles.
My guests today have been Austin Savage and Roland Esparza, co-writers of the feature film screenplay El Pavo Bravo that has been getting lots of national attention, most recently from the Sundance Film Festival's Development Lab. When Austin Savage is not writing screenplays, he's teaching writing for film and television as part of a weekly workshop. For more information and to sign up for the writing workshops, you can email Savage at asavage@bordertheater.org, and that's theater spelled with an R-E. You can also find him and the Border Theater on Facebook. Thanks to the KTEP staff for editing today's show. An archive of past programs is available online at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.